Ready to rock there, Jima?
I'm ready when you guys are.
Oh yeah.
Awesome.
All right. So I guess I just want to start the podcast with just a happy Father's Day to all the fathers and all that. And let's kind of start from the beginning, GMO. Like, where were you first introduced to ganja, and like, where were your first kind of experiences with ganja?
Sure. So I'll reiterate a happy Father's Day to everyone. And thanks for having me here. My first interactions with cannabis were later in my life. I didn't smoke for the first time until I was 20 years old. Back then we were getting brick weed, just whatever came over the border. I'm in the Southwest United States, so real bricks. I remember the guy breaking off part of a brick and calling it a quarter pound, and it was $80. It was cheap. It worked. It got me stoned. And finding seeds in there and just learning how the plant worked, it got me interested in growing it. So my first experience growing was with bag seed from Mexican brickweed in a closet under whatever light I had back then. It was probably fluorescence. And I grew two plants to completion, two female plants. And it was much better than the brickweed, obviously. And it just started my passion. I've been growing plants since I was old enough to walk. I used to enter pumpkins into the state fair and tomatoes into the state fair. My grandfather really took me under his wing when I was a child and showed me how to garden. And he had a little farm in his backyard, not huge, but enough to supply him and my grandmother with fruits and vegetables all summer long. And I spent a lot of time over there. So I was always helping. I was his right-hand man in the garden during the summers. And so I already had that passion. Already had that going and realized pretty quickly that marijuana helped a lot of my anxieties, a lot of my issues. It just calmed me down. So I quickly found out that that's what I wanted to grow. And I started getting on the cannabis forums around 2006 or 2007 and really digging in and learning what to do, what not to do, trying different methods. Ordering seeds. Back then I was ordering seeds from Canada, and just asking questions. And it's still something that I do to this day is any information that's shared is valuable. It's, I soak it up like a sponge and commit it to memory and write it down and take notes. And, that's something I would recommend to basically any gardener, whether they're starting out or they have some grows under their belt. Take notes and listen to what other people are doing and try things out that you think may work. That's how you're going to get better.
Was that your original handle too? Was a GMO when you started out in the forums too?
Yeah.
You said you've had that handle for a while, right?
Yeah, for a long, long time.
Is there any inspiration behind the handle GMO? Because that was long before the strand GMO was out, right?
It was, yeah, well before that. And yeah, it's genetically modified organism.
Yep. So those first few plants you grew in your closet, were they very stringy sativa types? Like, were they hard to tame when you first grew?
Total.
Did you see any males in that too? Did you like learn what the difference
between
a male and a female, or did you get lucky and just get some females?
I kind of had an understanding on males and females. I had done a little bit of research. Germinating seeds was really hard. I pulled out tons and tons of seeds out of that brickweed, and I would try to germinate them on top of a water heater in my little apartment, and they would cook or they wouldn't open. I did have a male, and I had two females, and they were huge. They were just super, super tall, and looking back, I know I harvested them probably 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks early. But it was still weed, and I grew it. I was proud of it, and that's what started it all for me.
Hell yeah. So what were some of the first seeds that you were buying that you were really stoked on and that you grew out and really, like, stuck out from the bunch for you?
The first seeds I ordered were from a site called BC Seed King. I ordered Mango, BC Mango, and I ordered BC Godbud. And the Godbud was awesome. It was probably the first grow that I did correctly, that yielded well, that was true to what it was sold as. The Mango, not so much.
At this point, you were mostly smoking pretty much just what you grew, or were you buying elsewhere as well?
No, I was buying. At this point, it was brickweed mostly, and then started getting introduced to some of, like, the nicer cultivars. I met a guy that was selling, and he would get stuff from California. I had a friend come back and stay for the summer that was living in California, and he brought some, gosh, I don't even remember what it was, but it was probably the first really, really good smoke that I ever got to sample. I was 21 or 22 years old. It was purple. It was beautiful. It was nothing like the brickweed that I was smoking. And that was from California. That was from a dispensary.
This was during the late 90s, early 2000s-ish? Somewhere in that area?
No, this was probably the later 2000s. I'm 38 years old right now. So that was probably 2007.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so it kind of just lined up. Like, I think brickweed was kind of on the way out, and good weed was coming in. We were starting to see less and less bricks, and more good weed, but I was broke. I was young. And when you can get a quarter pound of brickweed for $80 or an eighth of good weed for $60 or $65, I mean, the choice was easy for me. I was smoking brickweed because that's what I could afford.
Yeah. Weedus is asking if you found any gems in the brickweed. Anything that kind of stuck out that you were, like, very, very stoked on?
Yeah, I think that's where the real roadkill skunk. That's the roadkill skunk. I had that from the brickweed.
Real, real skunky stuff?
Yeah, no, not really. It was just all haze. It was, I only had one grow of the seeds from bag seed. And like I said, that sparked my interest. It got me researching, and that's when I started ordering seeds.
So where was like the first kind of things that you were really, really stoked on? Was the Godbud like the first strand that really, like, sparked your interest of, like, hunting out, like, elite genetics and more like premier genetics and things? Or
kind of what sparked your interest? I think that's probably where it all started for me. And then I started getting on the forums and trading with some other users. And at the time, it was, the site's still around. It's called Marijuana Passion. It was a real helpful bunch of people, and marijuana was still pretty underground at that point. So it was a place to learn and get information and share your grows anonymously. So trading there was pretty cool. And then they shut down for a little while, and a site called Canazon came to be. And Canazon was invite only. You had to know people to get invited. And it kind of opened up the gene trading for me, at least. It was the first time I was introduced to clones and getting clone only stuff. And like, it's a lot like Discord is now, and a lot like Cut Hut is now. We would trade for the best of the best at the time. I mean, I had Bubba. That's where I was introduced to Stardog Corey. Just pretty much anything I had cheese.
Is the
any of the big name stuff was getting
did
traded
you still
there?
hold the
And
quarry from then, or did you lose it and
no,
get it back on your own?
I lost the quarry in 2012.
Yep.
After growing it for several years, it I grew it once and it was quickly my favorite. It hits the same every time. It's potent. It looks good. It smells good. It's the one for me. And I lost it in 2012 during a move and kind of shifted. I was still growing, but not a whole lot. Not real consistently, not doing cycles. And I just got that back about a year and a half ago, about a year ago, I guess. And it's the one, it's still the one. I think everybody should try it.
Yeah, it's a real, real special plant, man. It's easy to grow compared to a lot of the other chems too. And it's got all the qualities of a chem really going for it. It's really, really potent. It's got that nice funky chemy tankness.
Yeah. And that burnt rubber doesn't lie.
Very, very rubbery.
Weedus was asking
what cheese cut did you get back in the day from there? Did it come with a name or is it just
yeah, it was Exodus. I had Exodus back in the day. Yeah. It was not my favorite, but it was cool to grow.
So I guess to dive a little bit more into like the different genetics that really called to you, I know that Corey is definitely one of your favorites. Is like chems in general kind of what you gravitate
Kims.
Towards, or is there any certain
yep.
like variety lines you really like?
Kims are my jam. I like them all. I like the challenge of growing them. I like the density. I like the colors. I like the taste, the smells, everything about Kims. It's weed. It's not candy. I think we were talking
for
about
sure.
that the other day is a lot of this stuff that I see coming out now and a lot of these hype strains are nice. They look beautiful. But I want weed that smells like weed. I want weed that tastes like weed.
Yeah, I feel you there. I really love the dankness of weed. Those dank, dark, gassy, bright, offensive flavors. Those are
yep.
really, really what draws me in. I mean, the candy's cool and all, but it's, I don't know. I would way rather have it taste like weed.
Yeah, yeah, that's me too. And so I grew the Chimera this two cycles ago now. It's a beautiful plant, but it's not... It's like candy.
It is so candy-like, man. It is straight grape candy. But that plant is ridiculously vigorous, too. I haven't come a lot that grows like that thing.
Yeah, I don't think I ever have either. I think that's probably the most vigorous plant I've ever grown. It was hard to keep tame. It was didn't really hold a canopy real well. And that's probably partly my fault, but...
Seems like one of those ones you kind of want to see a green stack in just because of how vertical it really likes to grow.
Yes, absolutely.
I guess to kind of touch on the Death Star that you just grew, any points on the Death Star that you're really, really enjoying?
Man, it's one of the easier sour Kim plants that I've ever had the pleasure of growing. It's, we were just talking about canopy. The canopy on it was amazing. That was with two or three tops per plant. That was four plants in a 4x4. Filled out the footprint in just under 5 weeks. And probably stretched 1.5 or 2 times and held the canopy the whole time. I think I probably ended up with just under 100 tops on it. Looks like it's going to yield pretty well, but that's hard to judge for me, at least.
I feel you there. I'm always trying to guess when I'm chopping it down, but you don't really know until you start weighing it up at the end.
If I get 2 pounds out of it, I'll be real pleased. And I think there's a real shot this time around.
Oh yeah. So we got a couple of questions from the chat. We just is asking, what was the high like on the Chimera? Cause that one had a pretty good CBG content, right?
Is it Chimera? I've been saying it wrong all this time.
I don't really know it. English is not my strong suit. So,
somebody at CanaCon a couple weeks ago was talking about it and said it that way, and I don't know how to say it. What's the high like on it? It's I don't know. I'd call it generic, I think. I don't think it was real special. It was it's not racy, it's not couch lock, it's just I don't know. I was high for a while. It's generic.
It's kind of middle of the road. It doesn't have a lot of it doesn't swing one way or another way a lot. It's generic. So
yeah, it's not punchy. It's not sedating. It's I don't know. It's all right. I don't think I'll seek it out to grow again.
I guess to jump back to the Death Star, did you top those when you were throwing them in there? Are those untopped? Did you prune them up super heavy?
I started with four clones, just showing roots, and they go into the system. They were in there for 5 weeks, and I like to allow it to get close to maybe a foot tall before dropping a net. When I drop the net, I'll top it and I'll start training. Depending on how it's responding to the first top and the low stress training, I'll top it a couple more times. With the Chimera, I topped it probably each plant got topped 10 times. With the Death Star, 2 or 3 times each. But you can kind of judge how
on the Death Star, it's a pretty fast grower.
I'd call it fast for a sour line. Yes.
Yep. Not as fast as that time here, that's for sure. But fast from the sour side of life.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit quicker than the Corey if you've grown Stardog. I'd call Stardog an average grower, average speed. The Death Star was just a little bit quicker.
Where is the flavor land on like the Death Star versus, well, I guess you aren't tasting it yet, but the smell wise, like how's it smell Death Star versus Corey? Are they similar smell or?
No, they're different. The Corey is kimmy, a lot of burnt rubber. That's always what hits my nose first with the Stardog Corey. The Death Star was like new rubber, tennis balls, tennis shoes, a lot of those kinds of smells up until about 6 weeks of flower. After that, it really shifted towards more of a rank, almost like dead animal smell, really offensive.
Oh, the foulness really sets in heavy at the end?
It was amazing. It was like one night it was a tennis shoe store, and the next day it was like something died. It's really offensive, really, really strong, really, really potent.
I'll be interested to see the terpene report on that.
And I am too. I think that's what I'm looking forward to more than knowing what the cannabinoid content is.
Hey, I'm interested to see if it will pick up some of those terpenes too, because I've been reading a little bit about those thiols and esters, like the skunk compounds, and some of those, they're not in the terpene family, and a lot of the time we don't even really test for them with a lot of our testing. So I'll be interested to see if they can like pinpoint with where some of those like foul rank things are coming from.
Yeah, that would be interesting to me as well.
I guess to jump it back, Haas is asking, what's your main decision factors on choosing what's next to flower these days?
That's always the hardest question. I always go back and forth, and with my style of growing, I can do one strain at a time. And when you have a library of stuff, it makes it really difficult to decide what's next. Up next for me is Motor Breath 15, and that came from a really good friend that used to be a part of Cut Hut, as something that he recommended for me based on what I like. So, Kimmy.
Yeah, I think that's right up your alley.
I'm excited to grow that out. I nailed that in that I was going to do that probably as I was switching Death Star to flower. I started planning for that. But things come up. So I recently acquired a permanent marker, the Doja Cut. And man, it got me thinking that maybe I ought to run that next, but I'm not going to. I'm going to stick to the plan. I'm going to run the motor breath. I have them ready. They're in cubes ready to go into this system. I just got to clean the room. And I'm going to flower that out just because I said I would. I told somebody I would, and I intend to follow through with that. But it's, man, it's hard. I, last winter I wanted to run the Cuban Black Haze, and I wanted to run it right next to Band-Aid Haze. And I wasn't able to get the Band-Aid Haze in time. So that project went out the window, but, I don't know if I could run them all at the same time. I would.
I get you there. I love how even a lot of your canopies look. You definitely make a nice fucking stacked room, and it makes it really, really difficult if you're growing many varieties in the same room. So,
it's nice impossible. To focus on even for sure. I've tried growing seeds in that system, and I've been successful in growing seeds in that DWC system, but it's real hard to remove males or runts, or if you need to dial in for a specific plant, it's impossible. So I think the way I'm doing it of running one at a time, it's what works for me. It's slow, and it makes it impossible to go through everything, but it works for me.
Is that your preferred growth method for just in general is DWC? Weedus is asking if you could kind of just talk a little bit about your DWC method.
So there was a point where I talked about a little earlier. I had taken a little bit of a break from growing cannabis. I was still doing it, but just not as much. I had, I was newly married, and we were kind of establishing our married life. So I had a little grow going, but nothing big. But I still had the itch. I like growing plants. It's my time to relax. And it still is today. I'd started a little vegetable garden, and being indoors in an apartment and having to carry soil up just wasn't working for me anymore. So I decided I wanted to learn how to do DWC, and I started experimenting with vegetables. And I was real successful with that. And when I was able to expand and start growing weed again, it just made sense to take what I had learned with growing vegetables in DWC and apply it to cannabis, and it worked. And I'm having it every once in a while, something comes around and it re-sparks my interest in growing. And I've seen that happen a couple times. One was back in the late 2000s. Getting access to clones like reinvigorated me, re-sparked my interest. I was able to grow strains that everybody else had and compare to what they had. Hydroponics was also like that. It was something new. It was a new challenge. And the results speak for themselves, at least in my system. I think the newest thing is tissue culture. Has really re-sparked my interest. I've learned something new, and I've applied it, and I've been successful with it, which is always what we're looking to achieve, what we're working towards.
Yeah, we should dive into tissue culture in a second here for sure. There's a bunch of people definitely stoked to hear what you got to say on that. One more question on the DWC. What kind of nutrients do you like to use, and what EC were you running the Chimera and Death Star at? I know you like to take notes and like a lot of that too. So do you mark down like a lot of notes in your reservoir, testing your reservoir? How often do you test your reservoir? Things like that.
Yeah, sure. I'm an avid note taker. Anytime I'm in the garden, I'm taking notes. That's something I recommend to every grower I meet too, is you'll get better if you can take notes and go back and reference it. And I have notes that I've taken that I haven't needed in 7, 8, 9, 10 years. And then all of a sudden I do, and it's there for me. And I know where it is. I have it indexed and I can get there quickly and see what was going on and what I can do to apply it to my current situation. I take reservoir notes twice a day, once in the morning and once at night. I check PPM, EC, reservoir temperature, ambient temperature in the room, and then and pH and any other notes that I think might be of use later on.
Is there an EC or something you're trying to hit for a sweet spot on the average plan, or do you kind of play it by ear and read the plan a little bit, or what's kind of your methodology on eating?
I think that comes with experience and with getting grows in any particular system under your belt, being able to read the plant. As a general reference, I use General Hydroponics Flora Series. I like the 6-part formula. I start off with their low feed schedule, and I work my way up. I always find that I'm adding more CalMag. Oftentimes in veg, I'm adding more of the veg nutrient. And then flower nutrient seems pretty spot on. I usually don't have to adjust that too much. But if I do, I can usually read the plant pretty well, and I'm able to make those adjustments when I need to. You had asked specifically about ECs that I'm running. Generally, like mid-flower, 3 to 3.5 EC is good for me.
What how strong are you running your lights with that too? Are you running those things full blast, or do you dial them back a little bit, or?
So that's also something that I try to read. Am in a single 4x4 tent with one light with an 800 watt LED. With some strains, I'm able to run it full open 100%. With the Death Star, I didn't. I think the highest it went was 90%. Usually with the Chimera, and I'll say it right now, I was running 100%, and I did have some bleaching on the tops. But other strains handle it just fine. The ODD, for instance, that ran at 100%, and there were buds touching the light or within a half an inch of the light. And
you
it didn't
talk
mind
a little
one bit
on that plant's background and things, because that's one you've hunted, right? That's
yeah, that was my selection, and that's a cool one. That's a special one, and I think it'll always be a special one for me. When I had made an order with Top Dog Seeds of BAM 95. I was hunting for something like Corey, and that's how it started. And after some recommendations, it was look at BAM 95 from Top Dog Seeds. It may be what you're looking for. So I ordered a pack, and it was a pricey pack, and it was not the easiest pack to acquire. But when I got it in, I probably right away started to germinate them, and had really, really poor success with germination. I think I had, if I recall, I had two or three that popped. And I went through those, but I did let JJ over at Top Dog know. And he offered to replace the pack for me. So I'm growing out the two or three that I had. I found two females in it, and they were spectacular. They didn't yield a whole lot, but it was really, really nice bud. And I didn't hold a clone of it. In the meantime, JJ sent a replacement pack of the FAM 95 that was confiscated by USPS. So I didn't have a replacement again. He asked me to reach out to his business partner, Money Mike, over at IC Mag. And I did, and got to talking with him and let him know that I was looking for Corey, and that it was my favorite. And he said that he was going to hook me up, and he did. He sent me a pack of FAM 95. He sent me a pack of iTray 95, which I also hunted through, and I did find a selection in that one. And then he sent a pack that was just marked GMO by GTH. And it was handwritten. It wasn't a label or anything. And that kind of sparked my interest. He didn't say anything else about it. And so I reached out and I said, is it Ghost Train Haze? Because that was the only GTR that I knew. And he responded with one line. He said, no, Grape 8 by Tress Haze. And I was like, man, that sounds cool. That's an interesting project. So I popped him, and I split that pack with a friend. I popped four of them. One of them didn't make it. One was a runt and one was a male. And the one that survived is what's ODD now. It is a special plant. I've not seen anything like it.
Is it a little bit more chem leaning or a little bit more haze in effect?
No,
or?
It's after some more discussion, and I stayed in contact with Money Mike after this. It's definitely more leaning towards the Grape Ape side of things. It's got the fruity smell. It shows the Grape Ape traits in the buds and in the leaves. It's a yielder. I took 26 ounces off of a single plant. I had room for probably another plant that size in that room. I think it would probably be a 3 pound per light strain. The way it stacks is real nice. It produces these huge, huge colas. The biggest I've ever seen personally indoors. It's just the whole story with it. And how it came to be. It's an unreleased pack. It'll never be released by Top Dog. It's something that Money Mike created, and it went from his hands to my hands. It's now gone back to him. It's just special to me.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's super cool, man. How is the stretch on her? Does she stretch like a haze too, or is it a
Yeah, she'll stretch for 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, I was. Both sides of that get a little stretchiness on them. GMO loves to stretch forever, and I'm sure the haze likes to a little bit. So that's cool though.
Yeah, some of the colas that I took off of that, I think there were about 10 real nice colas on there. Some of them were 3 feet long indoors.
Yeah, that's a mean cola. I'd love to see what that thing does outside.
Yeah, I would too. I think actually one of the users here is planning an outside grow with it this season.
Oh yeah. All right. I guess probably a topic that I'm sure a lot of people really want to hear about is your venture down into the tissue culture world. I guess we want to kind of start in the beginning of what kind of got you interested in tissue culture and kind of venture where you are today.
And I think that's probably what I'm most excited to talk about today, actually. Tissue culture is something that's been on my radar for probably 4 or 5 years. And it always seemed like something that's so out of reach. It seems so expensive and so above my head. And it's something that I would come back and read up more and see what the new research was every 6 months, every year. But nothing more than that. I started, really acquiring a lot of strains and having a lot of mother plants and realizing that room was a concern, as well as my mentality shifted more from growing flower to preserving these lines. I think preservation is something that's going to be really important in the coming years, and should have been on more people's radar in the past. I think, especially with hop latent viroid coming around, I think having these strains kept safe is going to be invaluable. So in September or October, I started that cycle again where it was, I was reading up on it and learning, and there were a couple users on CutHud even that were doing it, and I was watching their progress. in December, a good friend started posting some pictures and hinting that they were doing tissue culture and had been for a while. And I got to really talking with them. And at that point, I committed to diving in, that I was going to do it. I didn't care what the cost was. I didn't care what the time commitment was, that I was going to learn how to do it. So I started off by reading a book titled Plants and Test Tubes. Anybody that's interested in tissue culture at all should check that out. Yeah, it's a great read. It has a lot of information. A lot of the information will go above your head the first and second read through. And a lot of the information won't pertain to cannabis at all, or at the scale that we're doing it at. But there's some useful information in there. There's some shopping lists in there. And that was really the baseline. The mentor that I had that was teaching me and helping me along the way was perfect at mentoring. A mentor shouldn't tell you what you need to buy. A mentor should steer you in the right direction of what you need, and make you do the research. At least for me, that's what works. So I'd have a question and they'd say, these are the possibilities. These are what you could do, which led me to research one or two or three different styles and pick what I thought might work for myself. So in January, I started ordering stuff. And as I was ordering, I was still reading. I was still unsure exactly if that's what I needed, if it wasn't what I needed, if it was the right formula. Phytotech Labs is a website that supplies a lot of tissue culture supplies. And they have some really, really good SOPs listed. That's another point of reference that I would recommend to anybody looking to start up, is just go on their website and start reading some of their SOPs. They're very well laid out. They're full of information that you likely won't understand until you're doing it. But if you can follow a recipe, tissue culture is a lot like cooking a meal from a recipe card.
Hell yeah. Yeah, it's definitely something I've been looking into, venture into myself. I got the filter now, and I have the blower. I just have to build together and finish the flow hood and start playing in the agro myself.
Perfect. And that's probably one of the biggest expenses, if not the biggest expense, is going to be the flow hood. It's so important, though. Even with a flow hood, you're going to have some contamination the first couple times you do it. And even when you get a real handle on it, you'll have contamination. And I was actually hopeful for contamination my first time around because I wanted to see what it looked like. And I got it. I got to see what it looked like. You also get to see what plant material will hold contamination as well within the plant tissue. And you'll get to see what that looks like. With if you're self-contaminating, be it by breathing on it or getting some kind of impurity into the agar while you're under the hood, that'll usually become apparent within 72 hours, 96 hours. If it's within the plant tissue that the contamination is coming from, that's usually about 10 days to 2 weeks, see that kind of contamination show up.
Can you watch it work from the inside of the plant out too, instead of like the outside of the plant kind of in?
Yeah. So with tissue culture, you'll be, you'll run the plant material through a bleach solution, on a magnetized plate is how I do it. And depending on what you're reading, I think the plants from tissue culture recommends anywhere from a 60-second to like a 5-minute spin in that bleach solution. Obviously, using the lesser amount will be easier on the plant material, and anything over that, you're risking damaging the plant material, bleaching the actual plant material. So I do anywhere from like a 60 to 90 second rinse. in the bleach, and I do that twice for each plant material, piece of plant material. But yeah, things will still work themselves out from within the stem, from within the little particles of leaf that you have, and it'll show up in the agar.
Weedus is asking if you're using a chloride or peroxide bleach.
A chloride.
And you've been having some pretty good success now, right? You've been transplanting them out and going into multiplication chambers and all that too. So it seems like you're having a good adventure.
Yeah, it's been cool. It's been reinvigorating, and yeah, I've been successful with it, which makes it even more fun. I think I've been doing it for just under 6 months now. And I think long term, it's going to be the way that I'm able to fit more strains in. I saw somebody had asked how I choose what strains to bring in. And that's hard because I like them all. As a preservationalist, I would have them all if I had the room for it. And I think tissue culture opens up a new avenue to hold more strains.
Hell yeah. I think that's definitely probably the safest way to introduce plants into your kind of system and store them for the long term, for sure.
Yeah. Actually, I think you're touching on something that one of the other really big benefits that I found is as I bring in new things, they go immediately into tissue culture. They immediately get sent out to Tumi to be tested. And then if there are any remaining SNPs, they're isolated and kept in quarantine. But to immediately be able to drop it into tissue culture is a game changer. You're not risking spreading anything to your current library.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the biggest advantages for sure. And how is cost and like overall plant care? Like, as once it's in that state, does it save you a lot of time and effort and energy and money just tending the plants and all that?
It's relatively inexpensive once you have the equipment. I think we talked about the biggest expense is probably going to be your flow hood. A proper autoclave is also very expensive. Right now, I'm using a stovetop pressure cooker. A 23-liter Presto pressure cooker, which was just probably over $100, but a proper autoclave is about $1,000. The supplies are relatively inexpensive. And then once it's in tissue culture, I just had a batch come out that I put into rapid rooters to root out, and they'll become the new mom plants. But they had been initiated over 3 months ago. And once they're in the tubes, you don't have to do anything. They're under a light that's on 18 hours a day, off 6 hours a day. They don't need any water. They don't need any soil, obviously. It's a plant in a test tube.
Ooks is asking, is it true about the Gen Zeros retaining like lost vigor plant, like bringing back some of that vigor and things? Have you noticed much bringing things out of the culture yet?
I've seen that. Yeah. Things tend to root pretty quickly once you pull them out of tissue culture. They're small. They're like an inch tall, probably. And yeah, there's definitely some restored vigor in them.
Hell yeah. That's super cool. And then got another question too. We just is asking if you're thinking of getting a thermal cycler and for like home testing and things like that.
Yeah. That's on the radar. I scour eBay for them pretty regularly. I've done a little bit of research on what it's going to take. And yeah, I do see that happening in the future at some point. Hold true to that. You don't need to get fancy with it. My method is soaking rapid rooters or root riots in a pH 6.2 solution, with the label recommended addition of Clonex liquid. Once the plugs are saturated, they'll get a cut placed in them. I do cut leaves back about a third to a half length, and then I roll the stem ends in Clonex gel. It's the way I was taught, the way that works for me. It's simple. I've seen the Clonex sprays and just different additions and different methods, and this is what works well for me.
Hell yeah, I feel you there, man. If it ain't broke, why fix it?
And I did, for a while I was experimenting with like fog ponics for cloning. And that just became a bear, especially as I learned more about hop latent viride and mixing.
Yeah, I've retired all my aero cloners and things too, just because of that. It's just a lot more peace of mind, putting everything in its own cubes, separated and isolated and things.
Yep.
We're rounding about an hour here. Is there any other topics that you're really thinking of jumping into? Or
no, I really wanted to talk about TC, and I'm glad I got the opportunity to do that. But if I'm happy to hang out for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I was thinking probably open it up to everybody if anybody wants to ask some questions and things, definitely. I guess one thing I wanted to talk to you a little bit about is... I know you mostly use tincture these days and things, like a lot for mostly like sleep and stuff. Is there anything you want to touch on, like edible making wise and like things of that nature?
Sure. I used to smoke a lot. An ounce would last me a week, 2 weeks. I can't smoke anymore a whole lot. I'm really prone to anxiousness, to paranoia. So I don't smoke a whole lot, and when I do, it's one or two puffs. It gets me where I need to be. But what I do know is that cannabis has shifted from more of a recreational high for me to more of a medicinal high. I have problems sleeping often. So I use tincture almost every day. And my wife also uses tincture almost every day. I make it, and that's something I also experiment with, and batches are different. Anybody looking to do edibles, to make edibles, a magical butter machine is awesome. It's what I do, butter, oil, tincture. I make it all in the magical butter machine. What I have found works for me is a bottle of 190 proof alcohol, mixed with approximately 72 to 80 grams of cannabis flower. This last batch I did was all keef and whatever came off the trim tray. I think it was probably an ounce of keef. And just let it go through the magical butter machine. Has a cycle for tincture. It's like 4 hours or 8 hours that it just cooks together. It's like a slow cooker. And then I bottle that up, and 1 milliliter is sleep medicine. It's how I sleep through the night.
Oh yeah. Hooks is asking if you've ever messed with PG tinctures.
I have not.
Alcohol is kind of your go-to mostly. And
the alcohol does it for me. It's quick. Yeah. It's quick. Is the onset of the tincture is about 10 minutes for me.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely quick action. Is there a plan for after the motor breath to run yet? You think it's a permanent marker at the moment, or?
I don't know. I've got some cool ones coming that I'm not going to talk about just yet, but I got some exciting things coming.
Let's talk about your library just a little bit more. Is there, so you got a fucking pretty extensive library. If you could only hold three of these plants now, what would your top three be?
All three of them for Stardog Corey. It's the only plant I need.
Yep.
Yeah, probably anything with a Kim line. Probably Stardog Corey. This Death Star looks really interesting, but I don't know yet. Gosh, probably 91 Kim. That would have to be there. And if Motor Breath holds up to what I've seen, that would be there too.
I think you'll like that one, man. I grew her out last year around this time, and I was really stoked. It's kind of a more chem-heavy San Fernando kind of thing. Very, very stony herb, too.
Exactly how it was described to me and when it came in, and why I'm looking forward to growing it so much.
And I know you're a big fan of music too. I usually like to ask somebody if they can take three plants with them to the desert island. What three bands are you taking with you? You can take all their music.
Right now, number one, Slightly Stupid. I'd take Gone Gone Beyond and Jimmy
Buffett.
They're
pretty good. I just heard them recently, man.
They're cool, kind of gypsy rock.
Definitely real interesting, for sure.
Yeah. I like all music. Anything that gets me moving is
more than
is
man,
good.
Really.
Oh, yep, exactly.
Yeah, I guess that's probably a decent place to end it off. Well, thanks for hopping on GMO, and I hope everybody enjoyed the chat there.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It was a pleasure.